welcome to another episode of I'm Nano.
Putting the I in I'm Nano, I'm your host, Irfani.
And I am your other host, Monica.
And today, in our Nano Life series interview, we're going to talk about bringing biotechnology into real life products. Now, that's a big thing because that's what we always aim to do.
Yes.
Yeah, and today we have Darren Yip, a quality and regulatory coordinator. He has experiences working in a startup and a 100-year-old company. You know, that's a big, big difference. Welcome, Darren.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to ask Darren lots of things about his experiences, and hopefully we all can learn something about them. Yes. All right. So let's start with, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into, you know, biotechnology, biomedical engineering, all that sort?
Yeah. So I guess it all started in like high school, being exposed to biotechnology and having the opportunity where I guess kind of explore a little further than just biology, kind of like learning a bit about how we can integrate biology with kind of future technology and kind of coming up with more solutions towards various things like medication, biofuels, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of pushed me to further into my undergrad, which was focused in biotechnology at McMaster University. And then I guess that kind of started a snowball of me learning about a bunch of different nanotechnology in collab, like together with biotechnology. And I guess biomedical engineering has always just been in the back of my mind since I was pretty young, and just kind of wanted to pursue that further after my undergrad, where I got my master's in biomedical engineering at U of T.
Lots of bios.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of bios.
A lot of bios.
Maybe too much bios. Yeah.
I'm also curious, did you have any hobbies or other interests aside from the bio research and the biotech space?
That's important.
Oh, too many.
Oh, really?
I guess, I have a tendency to collect hobbies and tinker with things like leather work, doing a bunch of random things like fixing bikes. Right now, I'm in the middle of sewing something right before this podcast. I got into like coffee and stuff like that. Yeah, just a bunch of different things to keep me busy, I guess.
That's the first time I've ever heard hobby collector. That's an amazing description.
It's something I've learned to use.
Well, that explains the, like, you're also like a bio collector. It seems like you do the bio nano, the biotech, the biomed eng. And then I'm sure there might be other biologies in your future.
Oh, God.
So what did you work on exactly for your master's degree?
So mine was like more of a course-based master, so I didn't really do a whole lot of research.
Oh, cool.
Mine was focused heavily on biomedical devices and kind of design and development, as well as regulatory and like quality kind of as well. So it was mainly focused on how to make changes to a device and work with the FDA and Health Canada and kind of make fruition of these new emerging technologies to kind of make sure that it's safe for patients, and how we can prevent misuse, I guess, is also something that we learned as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Actually, so we had a similar kind of discussion where there's a big kind of, I don't know if you felt this, but a gap between the regulatory learning side and then the research side. Is that something that kind of made you interested in that U of T master's degree? Because that's very interesting that you got some regulatory and device knowledge as part of your training.
Yeah, I think I never really thought about regulatory. Like, I never it's not really glorified, and not a whole lot of people talk about it. I went into it thinking about like, oh, I want to learn about how the process of making new medical devices, and that's kind of what I really was into. Mm-hmm. And my back, like before my master's, I was doing a lot of R&D at like various bio labs in like biotech or biomed labs at McMaster. So it was mainly focused on kind of like novel technologies, and I never really thought about regulations, like I said. And it's I guess after my master's, I really thought, oh, this is actually really interesting. It's kind of problem solving on its own. It's really important, and it's not really something that a lot of people really talk about. And it's really important to make sure that these technologies are actually safe for patients, and it's not just like, oh, this is really cool, like we can do this and this, but it's we never really thought about, well, will it really work? Will it really benefit people? Will it really, like, can we get it to market and make sure it's safe for everyone, like immediately? Or are we just thinking, oh, this is just really interesting technology that we can push to the market and it's interesting, right? Or like it's really cool type of thing.
And consistency too, and I guess like different people will respond differently. Like, how do you make sure the product will work within the parameters you set it to? And I guess in research, a lot of the tests are done on rats, and humans are clearly do not behave the same way
For
as
sure.
rats or any of those animal models. So that's very interesting. So you kind of learn all of that as part of the training that you did, and then you kind of take that to the startup space, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, I guess my hopes was that in the startup I could kind of do a little bit of both, especially with startups. You hear about, like, you kind of get your feet wet with everything, and you kind of experience a little bit of every department because it's so small, and you kind of get involved everywhere.
Yeah, I feel like with academia, you just kind of think about things as cool, let's try this, but you never really think about applying it and make sure that it's safe and consistent, because what happens in the lab is not always going to work 100% of the time. When you release products, you have to make sure it works every single time, right? That's the biggest challenge, would be, to transfer academia technology to real life products. You started your job in the startup, right? Like, how did you decide to go towards there and then move on to work in a bigger company after that?
I guess I saw the opportunity at the startup and really thought about what I could accomplish there.
Like getting your feet wet, just like you said, right? In every single department.
Exactly. I think it was more of I kind of want to get experiences in this field before I can find something bigger. I think a lot of companies looked at me and thought he doesn't have like a direct engineering background, so it like really hindered me. So I kind of wanted something where I could actually get to use my existing experience and kind of apply it to a company that saw my value. And I think that was kind of like something I needed to show bigger companies that I do have this capability, even though I don't have like the specific, in quotes, degree. And I guess kind of I wanted to move towards a bigger company and kind of experience that as well. Because smaller companies don't really get to work with a whole lot of people, maybe a handful of people at most. And it's interesting to get that dynamic when you're working with people of different backgrounds. And I think it's really important that people can actually work with others and kind of take in other people's insight as well.
So with the startup versus the larger company, I guess the larger company, you would be more focused in your role. You don't do as much stuff, right? So you just more focus, you do one thing, and that's pretty much what you focus on, right? Is
You
that
don't
like,
wear as many hats, I guess, as versus a startup. You're like
yeah, definitely,
the
definitely.
50 things.
In addition to things that you do in the company and versus working with a single person, maybe a few people at most, to a larger group of people, like in addition to those two things, are there any other stark differences between working in a startup and in a, larger company?
I think having the like that go 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 mentality is pretty important for startups. Like
Go, go,
my
go.
like the larger company, everyone shows up at 9, finishes at 5, and it's like,
Oh,
all right, I'm
yeah?
going home. Like, yeah,
Oh,
people
yeah?
actually stick to
Oh,
that.
wow.
And like, I
That's
mean, it's
nice.
so similar to lab, right? Yeah, you guys are there, like, oh, I'm not done yet, so I'll keep staying until like what, 9 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so that's a pretty stark difference. But I think that really depends on the company. Like some companies don't care. And I guess the nice thing that is that this company cares, and they're like, once you're done, like you have the right to cut off all technology and contact if you want. and you kind of can just go home and shut off type of thing, and
Right.
then
That's
you
very
just restart
thoughtful.
the next morning. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
That's very thoughtful. And I guess you also get to work with more people. So you, I don't know, I guess it depends on the person, right? If you like working with a large group of people and have that camaraderie versus working in a smaller group and the go mentality, then that dynamic is also quite different, right?
Yeah, I think that just plays into company culture and how
Right.
important it is to that company if people get along and like can work well together regardless of everything, I guess.
Right. Well, I
Yeah.
guess turnover too, right? Like there's less turnover in a bigger company. So when you meet Joe and Joe's been there for 5 years, Joe's likely to be there for another 5 years, I guess. Whereas like in a startup, you don't know if you're going to be there like in a month.
Yeah,
Is that
definitely.
kind of what you felt like? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's kind of when you're at a startup, you're kind of unsure of what's gonna happen next, right? Like you're like,
Right.
am I gonna have a job next month? Am I gonna get a are we set? Like are we stable? But like this company, like they do a whole bunch of intro meetings, and
Okay. Intro
I
meetings
think
for new
yeah, so
people.
you meet everyone on the team, like everyone in the company. So I spent the
Wow.
first 2 weeks doing meetings, just going on Zoom and Teams and just like meeting everyone. And
Wow.
I think it was interesting that such
2 weeks.
a large company would be, yeah. So I think it was probably at least four full days of meetings of just sitting there and meeting all these new people and getting to know what they do.
Okay.
And it was a big difference to see that some of these people have been there for 20 years, some of these people
Oh
have been
my
there for
gosh.
like such a short time, but they came from a company that was also big and they've been there for like also another 10 years. And then
Oh my gosh.
you're kind of thinking, yeah, things are a little stable here because everyone here seems to be here for such a long time. And am I gonna be
Yeah.
here for this long type of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good to know when you have that kind of, permanent job, right? Especially right now,
Oh,
So,
yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Who knows?
Following up to that question actually just popped in my head. Since you're working with a larger group of people with the new company, I guess you also see different ages range. So you can be working with some very young people, but also some very experienced people, and then with various different backgrounds, some in business, some in some tech. Like that must be a challenge in itself to navigate working with a wide variety of expertise and personality and just age differences.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think a lot of the people there are older. I might be one of the younger people on in the company, I feel
Ooh,
like.
you're the baby.
I guess I sometimes forget what my age is.
Yeah.
Like, I think there might be a handful of people that are very close in age, and it's interesting to see that everyone that's older still gets along with everyone that's younger.
That's good.
Everyone's
Right.
very they're very heavily into culture, and they really care that people that they bring on will fit into the culture.
That's good.
So a lot of the older people that I talk to are still really talkative and very welcoming, and they don't really like they don't see age as a hurdle. They just
That's
kind
good.
of they're very willing to help, and they're very willing to contribute their ideas. And that's still really new to me, I feel like. Kind of coming from that startup academia, you're kind of sitting there not really contributing much, it feels like. And I'm going to these meetings with people with 5, 6 years of experience, and you're sitting there not really knowing what's happening. And they're like, oh, Darren, do you have any input? And I'm like, don't really know what's going on still. But it's still nice to feel like you're still included in. They don't really
Right.
care that you're not really, you're still really new, but they're still taking what you're thinking into consideration as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
Oh,
sounds like
that's
a
really good.
very healthy working environment. Yeah.
Yeah, so far it seems like it's everyone's very, I don't want to say that they feel, it seems like they're friends and they call themselves family, but it actually does seem like they care about each other and they're willing to help each other regardless.
That's really
Yeah.
nice.
Yeah, really refreshing. I use that word a lot, the whole 4 days of meeting everyone.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't experienced that before. I'm looking forward to eventually getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, following up to that again with the whole culture, I mean, we have the social aspect, but now we have also the business aspect, I would say. So how are the goals different between the different companies?
I think because of where that company I was, like the startup I was working at, was where they were at that stage of like device development, they're really focused on results and using those results to get funding. Whereas my current role, we're looking more at, I guess, quality of our products and making sure that we keep consistent products. Like we're not too worried about, well, I'm sure we're worried about bringing in new customers and making sure that we have good revenue flow. But I feel like the goals are more so focused on consistent quality than pumping out data as fast as possible.
And so when we say quality, what exactly does quality mean?
So I would say quality would be ensuring that what we bring in is so the company I currently work with is a medical device distributor. And when we bring in products from, say, US or Germany or whatever country, we need to make sure that what they provide us is up to standards, and they can provide us with certificates saying, these are all the tests we did on this specific lot of products. This is just saying to prove that we're meeting your standards, and we're saying, okay, that like we want to make sure that they're doing their duties and we're doing our duties and our diligence of saying what we're providing to the patients are good quality, essentially, and safe to use. And we're also doing a bit of kind of production, I want to say. I'm not sure how much I can see on that, but okay. I need to also check their quality production, make sure what's put together is to spec, and make sure that what they're including in this production kit, I want to say, is proper, and it's all included there. So then we make sure that what we provide to the customer is complete, essentially.
Perfect, thank you. And so when you do this type of like quality control managing position and regulation coordinator, like that takes a lot of certifications, or like I guess you see, like I see from your LinkedIn, you have quality auditing, or you're an internal auditor, you have all under all these like jurisdictions, medical devices management auditing system. So who pays for all this training? Is it through the company, and is it like, or do you have to go and get that those certifications yourself before you apply for a certain job?
So typically a lot of companies do pay for courses like this. Okay. But because of my transition between the two the startup and my current company, I paid out of pocket. So sometimes you kind of have to take the hit and think about what qualifications are needed for these positions, and what might help benefit you towards getting towards what your end goal is professionally. So I think I was talking to a friend, and they were telling me, oh, this specific internal auditing course is really important for my current position, and is kind of what I wanted to go towards. So I thought about it and figured that it would be really important to me, and it really did help me progress professionally. And it was something that a lot of companies actually did look for. I noticed that when I was applying to jobs before the certification for the quality and regulatory, a lot of people did reach out more after I got this qualification. So having that internal audit certification is really important to a lot of companies. And right now I'm actually helping develop like a training course for internal auditors at the current company. And it's, it's kind of scary.
Wow. That's awesome. Congratulations. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. So I guess you need to kind of also make sure that you have the qualification right before you apply. And it might mean you might have to do it yourself and not wait for the company. to
Yeah.
help pay for it. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
Yeah. But it
Yeah,
was an
exactly.
investment, right?
Exactly. You're kind of investing in your future, right? Like
Yeah.
any type of schooling. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it
Makes
like a
sense.
2 month course or is it like a 6 months, 1 year
It was actually
program?
only 2 days.
Oh,
Three days,
perfect.
actually.
Oh, okay. Okay,
Yeah.
I thought it was longer. Okay. That's
No. It
good.
was, what was it? I think it was 3 days for internal auditor certification, and then I want to say 4 days for internal auditor lead
Oh,
certification. Yeah. So the
okay.
process is like you do this course essentially, and then you need to do something else to actually be qualified as a internal auditor.
Okay.
But this is kind of gives you certification to say you understand these concepts and you know how to
Right.
apply them.
Right.
But you're not a certified internal auditor. But typically companies will view that as you have the knowledge and you can apply it. And a lot of companies see that as very useful information. And if they don't need to invest in another person to already have this knowledge, then it's kind of a
Right.
benefit to them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a huge benefit. And it's like I would definitely hire the guy that already has the
Right.
certifications versus the guy
Yeah.
that, well, I'm not sure if he's gonna stay. I'll help invest in him and then he might. Yeah, like that's, I think
Yeah.
that makes sense
Yeah, I
from
guess it
employee
also tells the
perspective.
employer where you want to go in the future if you already invested in this, right? Just like
Yeah.
you said, Monica, like you would choose someone who is more inclined to do this on their own time, meaning that they're already invested in this
Yeah.
track, right?
Serious. But like,
Yeah.
for writing your own course, do you feel like it's a huge leap going from like a research background to like writing your own course in quality and regulation? Like, is that like how is that transition? I guess you had like you did all your investments in yourself, so it's kind of it's okay, or is it nerve-wracking? Like, because it's a whole different language, technically, like.
Yeah.
I think it actually kind of helps to have that research background, and
Oh yeah.
because you're already starting with the knowledge of like a baseline of how to write SOPs and work instructions. So
Oh, okay.
it's very applicable. Just going through their SOPs, existing SOPs, and seeing that it's built exactly the same way, that it's kind of nice to be able to look at those documents and it's not foreign and you kind of
Right.
already have that knowledge of how to write SOPs. You already know how to read SOPs. You already know how to kind of dissect SOPs as well. It was
Right.
really useful to have that background, and all you're really doing is taking that experience of developing SOPs and just putting what you know from this quality course that you've taken and kind of just putting together everything and just kind of piecing puzzles together, and it's not as
Right.
bad. And
Right.
I'm kind of glad that I have more of a research background in that aspect.
Right.
Yeah.
Just wondering, when you write this course, is there like a legal aspect you have to consider when you write the course?
Yes. Yeah. So I think I'm only doing a presentation and maybe an SOP. I want to say I'm writing an SOP actually.
Okay. Just to
But
clarify for the audience, what is an SOP?
Oh yeah, they all know
yes.
this.
A
We all
standard
know this.
operating procedure.
Got it. And
Yeah.
usually when you're an undergrad student, they make you write these for a lab. So this
Yes.
is really good because you're showing that that is not wasted time. Like,
Oh yeah.
it's good.
Yes. So many hours of writing procedures is very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So there are a lot of, I guess, legal guidelines that you need to follow. So there's one called MDSAP, which is a medical device single auditing program. That's something that's very important for a lot of medical device companies. There's also ISO 13485, which is also another standard that's really important for medical devices as well. So those are kind of what dictate what needs to be covered and what needs to be performed during an internal audit. So you kind of have to make sure those guidelines are followed. I think that's for the most part that needs to be covered. But because of because MDSAP covers a lot of countries, it kind of a lot of companies like to use that because it encompasses so much. So that's kind of the guideline that a lot of companies use.
Okay. I mean, just following up to that, I guess because what you're working with right now is taking medical devices from different countries. So what you just said, MDSAT, it's the international one that's applicable to all of them, right?
I want to say yes, but I'm sure there's
Yeah.
more that
But like
I
there's different
don't know of.
countries that have their own rules, but then you have to find one that's, yeah. Oh yeah, so it gets very complex.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's written by, I want to say FDA,
Okay.
but they have a bunch of members that are part of, like, Australia, Brazil, and Japan, and Canada are a part of it, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of clauses, additional clauses. So, like, say you're working in Japan, or the company you're working for works in Japan, and you're trying to do this MDSAP, you kind of have additional clauses to each section to say, oh, for Japan, you kind of need to do this, 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 and this as well. So it's kind of encompasses everything. It's really nice that they kind of put this together because there's so many different rules for different countries, and it's nice that it's all in one
Right.
very long document.
Right. Yeah. Can't imagine it gets super long and super complicated.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
that's really good. Is there any like specific advice you can give to people that want to kind of follow your footsteps and do like quality control in a healthcare company or health tech, biotech?
I guess for quality control, you kind of want to get as much experience in kind of any type of quality control, like whether it's in the lab checking like environmental factors type of thing, making sure that you guys have proper quality systems. So like maybe even just managing what you would do in the lab if something went wrong, or kind of risk mitigation as well. There's something called corrective actions and preventive measures, or preventive actions. And that's really important
Interesting.
that a lot of quality control looks into as well. So that I think a lot of people don't realize that you're already applying these not this knowledge. And you kind of just have to sit down and think about what have I done that falls into these different categories of things that I've done. So like for example, like corrective actions and preventive actions, like say you spilled something and what did you do to clean up, right? And then you
Right.
kind of think about what are the preventive actions that I can do to clean up. So you kind of have that in place, and that's already considered a quality system that you already have done maybe in the past. And it's really simple things that you might not even know about that you've already done. And it's
Right.
a lot easier to kind of sit down and write down all these concepts and think about, oh, I've done this in the lab, and I've been already doing this. And you kind of go through it and realize you have a lot of quality experience, but you just need to think of, I guess when you're in a research position, you don't really think of it as quality, but
Right.
you really need to sit down and think about it, I guess, is the only thing I have to say.
That's awesome. That's a really good perspective on things. Yeah.
So it's just like you've done it before. You just kind of have to put it into like a fancier word, corrective,
Exactly.
preventative. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Like what do you do? You
Yeah.
spill, you have to wipe it and I'll do all that stuff. But now yeah, there's a term for it. Corrective
Yeah,
action.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome. And is there
Yeah.
like if you were to look back, would you have done anything differently to get to where you are now? Any changes at all? Or would you still have kept the same path because you've learned everything that you've kind of given advice on along the way?
I think I've went a very roundabout way of getting into my position because I think I was very focused on biomedical and more medical device development. I
Okay.
have a lot of friends that went straight from biotechnology into quality, and I never really thought about what quality functions I've done. So I never really,
Right.
like I said, like sit down and really think about what I've done that contributes to quality. And I kind of do wish I wrote down things about like kind of milestones I've met and what and how it contributes to my professional development. So like, I'm sure there's stuff in the past that I've done that I've completely forgot about that would have been really applicable to my current position, and bringing that up, especially in like interviews and stuff like that, would have been really nice. Cause just sitting there and really going back and thinking about, oh, have I done this before, is really difficult in the moment. But then maybe after the interview, you're like, oh, I did do this, but like 6 years ago, but I completely forgot. But yeah, I think the only advice would be take note of major milestones and what you've done in those milestones and how it would be applicable to your future if you wanted. That's kind of the direction.
Oh, that's solid advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that one. Like, I really feel that one. That's great.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. Like, keep a notion with everything you've done and then pick from that. Yeah.
It's definitely hard to do, but I think just having a notebook, just like a designated notebook for that, is really useful. I've started doing that as of beginning of my work at the larger company, but I wish I'd started from like undergrad.
Right. But I mean, in terms of your experience before with research, definitely helps you with like the quality control work, right?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. But you did take a roundabout approach to it.
A little too roundabout.
Oh man. I guess
a lot, but it's good learning, right? And then you kind of figure out what you want to do. And I guess COVID didn't really help with all that either. It was kind of just like, oh, work from home. That's it. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it was more of figuring out what I wanted. Made it a little roundabout.
Sometimes
that happens.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. You need a little bit of experience before you understand what you really want.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if I can add my 2 cents here, I guess because I'm just used to the research aspect, the quality control, I wouldn't have known what it's about until I've done the research stuff, because that's when I realized the problems that needs to be addressed would be addressed by the quality control, you know, stuff. So, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good way
to put it.
That's
just for me. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't even know like these kinds of jobs are available, to be honest, if I wasn't doing all these interviews and like expanding my network. So I think just knowing that it's out there is important. So thanks very much for coming on the show and teaching all our listeners and us about it.
Oh,
I think that helps a lot.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I
feel like it's so hard to know what's out there if you don't talk to people.
Yes.
And kind of looking at LinkedIn, you don't really know where to start.
There's so much.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But thank you for sharing all of that information so people can have a more informed, you know, thought and make their own decisions accordingly.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. All right. So I think we're on our last question. Where do you see, I mean, this is a bit deviating away from the quality control stuff, but where do you see the future of just generally biomedical engineering, bionanotechnology? Where would you see that?
I think AI is kind of the new thing. And it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be interesting how regulations will work with that and quality will work with that, because it's kind of hard to dictate.
Are there no like rules on that yet, or is it still being developed?
It's very vague, and it's very difficult to prove that what you have is working. I mean, there's only so much you can do to say this is actually working. There's a lot of new tech right now, and using AI to kind of diagnose things, but how can you say that it's safe and it's actually making the right prediction, right? You see these success stories saying, oh, it detected cancer in certain patients, but then how do we know that it didn't miss any patients that had cancer as well? Like, I'm sure there's someone in the back double checking, but in the long run, how do we know as a long-term use, it's actually going to be working as expected? And I think that's kind of scary in a way, but also really interesting that we can push away from the requirements of people that are trained in seeing these and the potential that they might make a mistake,
right.
And having this technology that can catch these mistakes type of thing.
Right.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
That's a good point. True. Yeah.
Because
I guess quality control, you always have to adapt to the emerging technologies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You always have to make sure everything's going to be safe.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like there's I forget what it's called. There is a ultrasound machine, or I guess device, that connects to, I think, an iPad or tablet or something.
Uh-huh.
And it utilizes AI while you're doing the ultrasound to kind of perform a bunch of inspections as well. And supposedly it can check, like, I think it can detect needles and also like fluid levels and stuff like that. But I'm not entirely sure on that, but it's interesting on where we are now and how it's going to progress, and a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then ultrasounds, I guess can you do an ultrasound anywhere where there's, like, I guess you, I know they do it for, like, when babies come, but, like, what other, like, I guess you can do the whole body for an ultrasound? Is that a thing?
Yeah, so I know that they're using it for, like, needle injections for arthritis, I think. So you really need to get between the bone, and they're using the ultrasound, I guess, see where the needle is while you're inserting the needle, like, between the bones and making sure that it's delivered properly. I know that was done even before this new technology. And I'm sure that there's a ton of other uses, which I don't know about. But it's just something that was on my mind because we were discussing it the other day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess it's like all these new technologies, it's so exciting. And you know, oh, they'll be really cool, we can solve this problem. But the fact that we need to make sure it's actually safe and we're double checking everything, that's also a very important aspect we need to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 It's easy for at least the researchers in academia to get into the whole hype and excitement for the new tech, but don't really consider how it's really applied in real life.
Yeah.
I
think sometimes we need to take a step back and think about what could go wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why we have you, Darren.
You're responsible for us.
We don't want, we don't need any Terminator. We just need the good stuff.
Any other questions, Juan?
I think I've asked all of mine, like, throughout. Just a very interesting background, and the whole quality and auditing, it's just amazing to me, because it is very technical, but in a different sense of the science and engineering side. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, language and terminology you have to learn and make sure that you're very thorough and detail oriented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also with the difference between working in a startup and a bigger company, I think that's something that a lot of people can really gain insights from, deciding if they want to go to startup or business. Because there's a lot of startups nowadays, you know, and it's easy to get into the hype of, oh, it's the next big thing. Again, with any tech, new big thing, we need to make sure it's safe, and we need to make sure it's suitable for what type of job we're looking for. I think, again, thank you again, Darren, for coming and sharing your insights and your knowledge. I think it'll be very helpful.
Too.
And work-life balance.
That's the main one with you.
Yes.
Guys. Yeah.
So this has been really great, very insightful and enlightening for us. Thank you again for sharing your time and your knowledge. And I think that is all that I have for today. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Darren, and everybody out there, stay curious. Because-